This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
In the beginning, no one cares. Like, no one even knows your brand. I think the story is more important. You have to kind of convince people to be a part of the first step of your story. As a creator, you appreciate other creators. Like, sometimes someone comes up with something and you're like, that's really good, you know, and you just want to support them. But networking to me sounds very LinkedIn-ish. So that's why I don't feel something when I think of networking. People go to school and get a degree, but like, you need more. So that's also very important, to really perfect your taste and to be inspired by things other than your interest.
In this episode, we're joined by Akarmi, founder of Lack of Guidance, a brand that's redefining football culture through fashion and storytelling. From humble beginnings to collaborating with global icons, Akar shares how resilience, creativity and a love for the game drive his work. Join us to hear about his journey, the challenges of building a brand, and the lessons he learned along the way. Welcome, Akar, in the podcast.
Thank you.
We're sitting in your store, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe a little bit how the store looks like and where the store is located?
It's a very small store in the center of Amsterdam, in the red light district to be exact. It's 27 square meters, so it's, when I say small, it's really small. And we've been here for 3 years. The store is designed by a friend of mine called Ciro de Clos. I'm still super happy with how everything
looks great.
Thank you very much. And yeah, it's basically the heart of the brand, let's say.
How did you end up here?
We already had an office around the corner. And at some point, some people that were working there kind of started getting on our nerves. So we were looking for a new place. And then we heard that this place was up for grabs. Like 4 years ago, it used to be a Red Light Radio. And they were in this space for 10 years. So it was like a very iconic place for Amsterdam. It was basically the first destination for a starting DJ, let's say. So a lot of big DJs started in this space. So it has a lot of Amsterdam culture. So I'm really proud to be in this space, actually.
And is there also a special reason for being in the red light district?
It's not really a coincidence. It kind of started with Pata coming to this neighborhood. And after them, a lot of brands followed. So on the Zadag, there's a lot of relevant brands in the fashion industry, let's say, that are pushing boundaries. And we're not exactly on the Zadag, but we're in the same neighborhood. And I wouldn't want to be in any other neighborhood, because this is the place where like the most culture exists, I think, in Amsterdam.
How's life treating you at the moment?
It's treating me really well. I have to say I'm very happy at the moment. I feel lucky. I've had a rough year, but when I wake up, I feel lucky.
Can you share a little bit what made it so rough?
I had to fight, let's say, for this company. And that's what made it rough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why Lack of Guidance? Shall we go to the old days in Osdorp, probably?
We could say that the story of Lack of Guidance started there, because when I grew up in Osdorp, the only thing I could think about was football. And it was like I had to pass two football courts on my way to school. And on the way back, like I couldn't not enter one of them on my way home. So that's just my first love was football. And I started playing when I was 5. And that's kind of how the story of Lack of Guidance started.
Why fashion?
Because as I was getting older, football was not my only love anymore. So when I was, let's say, 12, music was becoming a very big love of mine. When I was like 14, movies was getting, like, I was getting a bit more evolved, let's say, as a person. And at some point, also fashion became a love of mine. And in my begin 20s, I was looking for purpose, let's say. I was looking for something that I could really pour my heart into. And then I wanted to create a brand that's contains all my interests and all my loves, let's say. So the first idea of Lack of Guidance was to build a brand that contains football, film, music, art, and Amsterdam.
It seems to have worked.
Well, yeah, I mean, not the initial idea. The initial idea was to have all these themes to play as big as a part as the other one. But at some point, a guy I know, he advised me to just pick one theme and really go for it. And that's when we decided to go for football. The initial idea was to create a brand where it's normal to host a football tournament, but also a movie night and also a party and also an art exhibition, and to do it in the city, Amsterdam. And we're a football brand now because we chose the theme football, but we still do a movie night every now and then. We still do a party every now and then. And we have done art exhibitions. So it's still nice to know that we are going back to this initial idea, because that was the goal, to combine all my loves in this brand.
What kind of a feeling do you get when you think about bringing people together?
It's a nice feeling to see that people appreciate your work. You know, it's I always think like it started as an idea. That's what gives me a lot of a warm feeling. You know, like the thing is, I used to be like begin 20s. I used to be a guy that always had good ideas. So everyone would tell me, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And then I was getting old and I was like, but do I want to be a guy that only has good ideas, or do you want to be known for executing them well? And that's when I kind of, grabbed my balls together and was like, I have to do something, you know, and otherwise I'm just going to be this guy that is known for having good ideas.
How did you do it?
I mean, we started very slow. We started very slow and we just started with one t-shirt. You know, and that's also something that I advise to other people that want to start a clothing brand. I noticed that a lot of people are like, they want their first t-shirt to be in the best quality, and the hoodie has to be with, like, but in the beginning, no one cares. Like, no one even knows your brand. So to spend all this money on the greatest quality, and like, I think the story is more important. You have to kind of convince people to be a part of the first step of your story. I'm a graphic designer, and I remember just looking at the Bayern Munich logo, and I was looking at it as a graphic designer for the first time and not as a football fan. I was looking at it and I was like, whoa, this is an insanely beautiful logo. And one day I was just playing around with it and I changed the letters of Bayern Munich to Lack of Guidance. And I just had this voice in my head saying, like, if you put this on a t-shirt, people are going to buy it. It was just a very simple thought. And that's when we decided to do it. We printed 50 t-shirts just in a local printing shop in Amsterdam. We did a photo shoot and people started buying it. So that was a great feeling. For the first time, you actually executed an idea, and it's already people in all corners of the globe are buying it.
And then all of a sudden, Entschuldigung.
Yeah, exactly. that was a different, that was less nice. But I have to say, in the moment, it was also funny. It was like...
Can you explain for the people who listen what happened?
Well, I was in a coffee place with my now ex-business partner, and we received an email from the, let's say, the legal partner of Bayern Munich, basically saying that what we did is not allowed, and that we have to pay a fine, and that we have to do this and that, and to destroy, that's the word they use, we have to destroy everything. And then we just sent them an email saying that we were like two silly students that were just doing a school project, but we were obviously not. But
and you sold the shirts already, right?
It was already sold out, so that was a big help. And then they said, like, okay, as long as you never do this again, we're fine with it. But it was a nice story for, like, because it was our very first t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like, oh, we made so much noise that even Bayern Munich found out, even though this was our first t-shirt. So that was a good eye-opener to see, like, hey, we can really make noise with this, you know?
Would this also be an addition to your recommendation, just start with one t-shirt and then also annoy people to make noise?
Well, I think it's really good to make noise one way or the other. And I mean, if you're breaking some balls along the way, I mean, that's something, if you're going to start a business, it's not going to be easy. So why not start with the, why not start with an appropriate way? Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before this interview started, you mentioned you studied at the same art academy as I did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
I didn't go to the art academy in Rotterdam, but I went to Grafisch Lyceum.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Why graphic design?
Well,
why Rotterdam?
Why Rotterdam? That's a good question. I don't even have the answer, to be honest. But when I was around 16, 17, a friend of mine, who's still a really good friend of mine, called Vital de Vrel, he's like an artist as well. It was the first time that I saw a graphic designer, which was a person that's like me, you know? Like, I always thought that graphic design was like a nerdy thing. And then I saw him, he was doing graphic design, but he was like, he had a joint in his mouth while doing it. So for the first time, I saw someone else that I could relate to that was doing it. And I thought that was very pivotal for me at that moment. So I was like, yo, maybe I can just try it. And I did. I didn't succeed, but I learned a lot along the way. And Rotterdam, basically, I applied for the Amsterdam school, but I was too late. And then I went and looked for Graafje Lyceum in Rotterdam because I like Rotterdam. It's a cultural city. And then I was like, okay, Rotterdam it is. It was like a very, very easy decision. And I went there and I only stayed there for 2 years. So I didn't finish it. But I have learned like the things that I learned. Actually, it wasn't a graphic design course. It was DTP. And I have to say, I learned a lot still, especially now because I've worked at Fantastic Men. And obviously, when you're making a magazine, you're dealing a lot with paper and ink and everything. And I have to say, all the stuff that I'm applying at Fantastic Men, I learned in those days. So yeah, that's a good thing that somehow it was beneficial for me.
And I can still see when you write me an email and we can have a conversation about the podcast.
Yeah,
it's so graphic. It's very much in the details. It's very minimal, but you can tell.
Okay.
And I like it very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
What did you do after the 2 years?
After the 2 years, I was still very young. And then I kind of decided to just start working. So I was working in clothing stores. I mean, not shitty, but like as in not the greatest clothing stores, but I was just working there to get by and to make some money so I can provide for my own lifestyle, let's say. And basically that's what I was doing. But I did have a clear thought in my mindset that said, like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So I have to come up with something. And that's when I started the idea of building a brand.
How do you do this?
Just a lot of thinking. It's like, what do I want to do the rest of my life?
Big question.
It's a very big question, yeah. So, and during that time, I didn't know what I wanted to do because I wasn't sure. I was young, and when you're young, you have a lot of thoughts in your mind, and there's not a lot of clarity. And the older I got, the more I was thinking, like, hey, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And at some point, I just realized football. It was there all along, but it was something that, like, it was felt really close to me. And I remember in the beginning days when I was telling people, like, I have to say, like, when we started in 2016, football wasn't the coolest thing. Like, now everyone's like, all the big brands are like flirting with football, but back then it wasn't the cool thing. It was mainly skateboarding was the cool thing, you know. But it felt really real to me, and I was convinced that I could present football in a way that wasn't being presented at the time, very personal. And because I remember, like, when I was seeing brands that were trying it, they did it in a way that it wasn't for me. Even though I love football, it still wasn't for me.
Can you give an example of a brand?
Well,
at
the time, it was Parler, for example, that was making a lot of big moves. But still, I didn't feel that they were speaking to me. And I knew that if I was going to try it, it's going to be the exact opposite of Baller. And there's a brand, Copa, for example. They're more on the retro side. And they've been doing it for a long time. So as an entrepreneur, like, my hat's off to them, because it's not easy to have a company for that long.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not my route. And also, it's also not my vision on football. So I knew that I wanted to keep it really personal. And I remember when I was telling people about the brand that I wanted to start, people were really like, this makes a lot of sense. And me, as a designer, I want things to make sense. That's the biggest thing. Like, every time when I'm coming up with something, it has to make sense for me. So that, I think that's a big part of it.
And do you also do it for others, or does it first start with personal passion? And
I think it starts with personal passion, yeah. It's not the sexiest thing to say, but like, a lot of things that I'm doing, I'm trying to impress myself first. And it's not the nicest things to say, but like,
it's a good start.
I mean, that's because I'm not impressed easily. So I know that if I impress myself, and if I see that I did a photo shoot and I really like it, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Because I know that a lot of people aren't as critical as I am. That's the starting point for myself when I'm creating. But obviously, like, the next step is that I get a lot of joy when I see other people appreciating the work that I do. Sometimes that feeling is even bigger than me trying to impress myself. you know, and especially now because we have a store, I just love the feeling of coming up with an idea, creating it, and then people walk in and they're like, I love this. You know, that's just the best feeling to me.
Do you have the feeling that you have grown a lot in the past years?
Definitely.
Yeah. How can you tell?
I always see Lack of Guidance as a baby, and that I'm kind of like...
As your baby?
As in my baby, yeah.
Right. And or in the market?
Also in the market, but it's I'm just trying to raise the baby to be a, a good boy, let's mm-hmm. say, and eventually a grown-up, you know? And I also don't mind if it's going to evolve with me, you know? Like, for example, I'm designing a collection right now and I'm making a lot of shirts. It's a summer collection and I see that, like, in the summer I wear a lot of shirts, like as in a button-up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small thing, but it's like, it's also seeing the brand evolve. We've came from t-shirts and now we're making shirts. There's some development there. It's a small step, but yeah, raising a kid, it's small steps. Not that I'm a father, by the way. It's
a good step.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Do you have the feeling that it grows in a way that you like or with the pace that you anticipate?
Yeah, definitely. Especially from next year, like having a clothing brand is also a big thing is collaborations. It's going to be the first year that we're going to do some really big ones. So that feels really good. It's like kind of the moment is really, really good for the brand to go to the next step.
What kind of, I don't need to hear the names, but what would be a good collaboration for you?
Well,
like big brand, famous brand or people or a story?
It depends. It could be either product or it could be story. It could be both. But obviously, because we're a football brand and football is a sport, like the biggest, I mean, the best partner would be a sportswear brand. Yeah.
And what do you do then as a collaborator?
It depends, actually. It depends. Every collaboration is different. And sometimes you're very limited. So sometimes you just say, hey, here's a product, change the colors, and that's it. And sometimes they're like, hey, here's the product, but you can change everything you want. And other times it's like, hey, we're going to make new products. And it's really, I really enjoy the process. Because I don't think that we need a lot to make something interesting. So I see every collaboration as a challenge to get the best result possible. So
why do people like Lack of Guidance?
Because it's good.
Yeah.
Points. No, I think
what is good?
It stands for something. It's I think it's well designed. It has quite a high quality standard. At the same time, a lot of pieces that we make are quite timeless. I mean, it's me saying it, but like I notice a lot of people still wearing stuff from 5 years ago, let's say. So I think that's a really good sign that it goes a long way. Like I wouldn't like it if people buy something this year and they're already selling it next year or something. You know, it's like people are actually wearing it a lot. Mm. And I think that's a really good thing about the brand. And what I like the most actually is that we make a lot of t-shirts that have a message, let's say. And people, when they're in the store, they're like, hey, when I wear this t-shirt, people don't stop talking to me. And I think that's a really nice thing about the clothes that we make. That's actually one of the things that I enjoyed the most about my brand. You know, it's like a friend of mine, Hendrik from Germany, who was like working at Heisnobite, he just sent me a message like, hey, I was in New York and like today only like 5 people are arresting.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah, I love that. You know, it's like it's still, even though we've been doing it for a couple of years, it still feels fresh and it still feels like the new kid on the block, you know, in a good way.
Why do people approach others with your brand?
I don't know. I think you should ask them, but it's like, it does something. I like that.
You focus on the vintage, or at least you don't follow trend.
I try not to.
And all the things that you do have a story from like Johan Cruyff and that you pay your tributes and such. But you also have some which make a statement. Like Raheem Sterling. Is this a little bit the angle that you always try to pursue, that whatever you do, there should be or a story or a statement?
It's not something that we consider. It's just something that grows organically. I didn't start the brand to be like, hey, we're going to make statements and we're going to do this. And like, it just started organically. I remember before the World Cup in 2018, we had a conversation with Jon Kramer, the director. And it was just because he liked the brand. He wanted to see who's behind the brand. We went there and at some point he asked us like, who's your favorite player? And then we named a couple of names and we asked him like, what's yours? And he's like, Hakim Ziyech. So we had a conversation about that and we ended up having a conversation about how unique it is that when you grew up in Holland as a Moroccan Dutch talented football player and you had the privilege of choosing between Morocco or Holland, everyone would tell you pick Holland because in that case you can maybe play a World Cup.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that was very interesting to me that in the first time in history Morocco was playing the World Cup and Holland wasn't. So that was like this situation, it was just very special. And we thought like, hey, we're a football brand. We're going to make a project about this. And that's how it came about. And it was the first project that really like, I really felt really some type of way about it because I was like, hey, we're actually saying something. You know, we honored the players that, the Dutch players, let's say, in the Moroccan team, and people loved it. And I was like, I like this. Like, we actually...
I liked it.
Yeah. I thought, yeah, we should do more of this, but at the same time, we're not looking for it. We're like, when we notice something, we act upon it. And same goes for Raheem Sterling. Like, we notice, like, this guy's getting, like, beaten up by the media. Like, why is this happening? He's such a talented player. And then we start digging and we're like, okay, Sterling stands for money. And oh yeah, what's the biggest honor you can give someone? It's like putting it on a banknote. And that's like, okay, that's an idea, you know? And then you execute it. And like, that's just like a very nice process. You know, it's like you see something happening in the society, let's say, and you start digging and then you get somewhere. And I think what's so interesting about football is that things that happen in society often find its way to the football world, you know? So that's just very interesting. Like, let's say the racism in Holland, it finds its way to football by people not picking for Holland. If you start digging there, you'll end up at racism. Like, if you tell a guy that he's not Dutch his whole life, and then you expect someone to choose for the Dutch national team, who knows where it's going to end, you know? So,
how important is Schmidt Cruyff to you?
Well, Schmidt Cruyff is very important to me because it doesn't even feel like a football store. It feels like a museum. And I remember when we had the very first t-shirt, the Bayern Munich t-shirt, I came up with this idea like, hey, how cool would it be if it was the only retailer that would sell this apart from us? So we went there, we presented the shirt to them and they hated it. They were like, what the fuck is this? Like, what did you do to the logo? You ruined it.
The Schmidt Cruyff was by the brother of Johan Cruyff.
It used to be a shoe store in the 40s. And then in the 60s, Henny Cruyff, Johan Cruyff's brother, he took it over and he made it Schmidt Cruyff. And he started selling sportswear as well. And obviously because his kid brother, Johan Cruyff, was such a big name, he was often doing promotions for the store, making pictures while he's like working there. And like very big football players like Rijkaard, they have to pick up their Ajax jersey in the Schmidt Cruyff. You know, it's like, it's a very iconic place for Amsterdam. And there used to be a lot of stores like it back in the day. Like when I used to buy football boots, I would go to similar stores like Schmidt Cruyff, where you sit down and the man actually puts the shoe on your foot, like very magical moments. But as of now, it's the only store left, in my opinion, in Amsterdam. I don't know about other cities, but there's only one left. And otherwise, it's Football Shop Internet or something. But like the magical football store, that's Schmidt Cruyff.
So then you have this history and feeling of iconic and magical. And then you come up with a shirt and they say, I don't like it at all.
Yeah, they hated it. And
what happens with you when you hear such
a... It was funny, like, because there's just two funny guys and we just laughed it off. And I remember, like, because we showed them the sample. And weeks later when we were selling it, a friend of ours called Kapi, he's like, can I do something for you guys? And we were like, yeah, maybe call Schmidt Cruyff and ask them if he's selling like a guidance. So he did, like, he put it on speaker and he's like, hey, like, question, like, are you guys selling lack of guidance by any chance? He's like, what? Are you selling lack of guidance? He's like, yeah, it's on its way. And then, that was like a very funny moment. So like, we ended up going there. We're like, hey, like, let's work. And he's like, yeah, let's work. We never told him that it was us calling, but it was a very funny moment. Yeah.
How important is networking for you? Knowing people like this?
I have to say, it's the last couple of months. I mean, this word is kind of bugging me. It doesn't feel like networking to me. Mm. You know, it's like if I see people around me that are talented and I want to support them, that doesn't feel like networking to me. Like if I go to their event or whatever, it does not feel like I'm networking. It feels like I'm supporting friends that I admire sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, but networking, yeah, what's networking?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Supportive relationships.
I mean, it's important. You're like, I don't perceive it as that.
Mm.
As a creator, you appreciate other creators. Like sometimes someone comes up with something and we're like, oh yeah, that's really good, you know? And you just want to support them. But networking to me sounds very LinkedIn-ish, you know? So that's why I don't feel something when I think of networking. I'd rather make friends, let's say, or build relations with people in the industry, genuine relations, but I never think of it as, hey, I'm networking now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Who has helped you the most or who was your biggest support?
There's a few, but I think there's actually two that's really, really, really important to me. And I think that's my brother and my girlfriend. So my brother is basically the he guides me, you know, like ironically enough.
How far apart are you in years?
3.5 years. So he's 3.5 years older than me. What I admire about him is that he's very strategic. He knows what he's doing. And that's really helpful if you sometimes don't. And he has a really clear view on everything. And he's always like, hey, you should do this and you should do that. And it's also really good to have someone around you that you know has the best interest for you, which is not always the case. Like friends, I mean, I love my friends, but it's a different relationship with your brother. You know, like, you know, 100% sure that he has the best interest in you at all times.
That's a lot of value.
That's a lot of value. And same goes for my girlfriend, you know, like she's a photographer. And
a good one, hey?
A crazy good one. Yeah. So it's not just a photographer that's helping. It's actually, I wouldn't want to work with anyone else. You know, it's like, and she's my girlfriend. So that's very special. And it's not even the working relationship part, but just the store that we're in right now. It's like, it's very personal and it's very like, I don't tell this to anyone, but when I needed the money to build this store, she was there for me, you know?
That's a good base.
Yeah. And I would do the same for her. But when I was building this store, there wasn't money on the bank and it was COVID and it was the weirdest time to open a store.
I already wondered how.
It was the worst time to open a store. But I was just like, as an entrepreneur, you have to stay positive. And I was, the only thing I was thinking like, I mean, it's not going to end. COVID is not going to stay here for 10 years. There's going to be a day that it's going to be over, you know? And that's the only thing that was driving me. And I was like, oh, we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just not taking no for an answer. And I remember I needed some money. And at that time I was like, I'm going to ask her. And obviously I paid her back really quickly, but the fact that she did, it just means the world to me, you know?
Yes, yeah. I can feel one cross of the table.
Yeah.
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 She is a very good photographer.
Yeah, yeah. It's phenomenal.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like the brand as much as I like how it's being portrayed.
Same.
That's,
But it's also like she has made a lot of developments. So like when I met her, she wasn't as good as she was right now. So she has made insane development. So when I met her, she was working for the newspaper Volkskrant, and like a few months or maybe a year after she quit. Actually, no, very quickly actually, because when she quit like 1 or 2 weeks before COVID, and when COVID hit, she was like, "What the fuck did I do?" You know, I skipped my job right before COVID, but.
You don't see it coming.
No, you don't. You could never see it coming. But see the developments that she made, it's insane to me, you know? As a craft also, like like her father is a photographer as well. And like he's shown her some tricks and it's really nice to see.
How can you tell as a graphic designer, for instance, or as a partner, how much she is growing?
She kind of developed her own style, and she really accepted the fact that she's a portrait photographer. And she was struggling because in the beginning she was kind of like, hey, but I like all photography, and I like this, and I also like this. But at some point it's really good to specialize. And that's when, like in the beginning of our relationship, it was really hard to talk about her career and about her craft and about her, let's say, photography, because she would get really emotional. Because I would sometimes say the things that she needed to hear, but she just couldn't accept it. And it was really emotional. Everyone has it, but like now she's gotten way better at it. But in the beginning, it was almost like fighting over conversations about her photography,
mm-hmm.
which is really good also because she just takes it really seriously. She's a real professional, you know. It's like she doesn't joke around. Like I remember after 1 or 2 years when we met, she showed me a TV show where she was 14 and she was on Dutch television entering a talent competition, and she won.
What was it about?
Kunstbende. Do you know this? Just a talent competition, let's say. Mm-hmm. And her craft was photography, but everyone was doing something else, and she won the prize, and she was only 14. But it was really cute to see her like so little and like already knowing what she wanted to do. You know, it's super, mm-hmm. super interesting. And yeah, you can really tell that she feels really comfortable in that craft.
And she does a hell of a job for your brand.
Exactly.
Before we forget, what's her name? To give a big shout out.
A very big shout out to Eva, who's my love.
How is it to work together on this brand and push it forward, right?
I have to say it's really working well for us.
Yeah. Because it's also work-life balance in a way.
Yeah, but strangely enough, like I wouldn't advise it to anyone, but for us it works really well.
Why not advise it?
Because I wouldn't just because it's also dangerous,
mm-hmm.
to work together with your partner. It's not for everyone. I can say that, but for us it works really well because we also want to impress each other a bit. You know, it's like sometimes we do a shoot and. I mean, it sounds very silly, but like when we're like doing the photo shoot, we're already talking about, oh, like I can't wait to lay on the couch with you tonight. And it's very like we play silly about it, but at the same time, we're really going the extra mile to make the best work possible. But we're also just playing around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also important if you're working together to not make it really serious and not make it like, hey, I'm the customer and you're the photographer. It's like a collaboration, you know?
Sounds healthy.
Yeah, that's kind of how we do it.
Hasn't this always been like this?
Mm.
Or did you at a certain moment said to each other, let's find another way, or how do others do it? Because I can also name a lot of couples who work together and it works.
Yeah.
So if people are listening right now and they say, oh, we shouldn't be, but it sounds so natural.
Because it is natural. And it's also, I don't know, it's like, I think what helps is that we're really on the same page.
And you have a baby.
We don't have a baby.
Lack of guidance.
We have a baby. No, it's Lack of Guidance is my baby, but she cares for my baby really well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of casting, for example, we're exactly on the same page. You know, like, and also in terms of photography, but because we're so intertwined in how we look at the brand, there's not a lot of conversation. I remember before I started working at Fantastic Man, when I received a photo shoot, it was just, okay, it's done. You know, maybe some editing here and there, but it's done. But when I saw Joop van Bennekom, when he received the photo shoot, he's manipulating every single photograph. So everything is now, okay, I'm going to turn it a bit. I'm going to like add a bit here, and I'm going to skip this, and I'm going to Photoshop this, and I'm going to, oh, his face is too red here. And oh yeah. And that's when I saw him doing that. That's when that also happened with me. Like every time when Eva sends me the photos, I need one day to really see if it's perfect. It's really good, but I want to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I really learned at Fantastic Man.
How valuable is your education in Rotterdam on that part, looking at the graphics?
To be honest, it's a very weird thing to say, but I don't see myself as the best graphic designer.
No need.
Because I'm not. But you need more than just the skills to be a graphic designer.
without the study, could you do what you do right now?
I just needed to know the basics. You know, when I left the school, it didn't feel like I failed. I learned a lot, you know?
I think this is a very important message for a lot of people.
Yeah. As long as you're learning, you're not failing. I was like, okay, I know things now. I know how to design this, and I know how to make a magazine, and I know how this and that works. And so I needed those skills to improve my own career. But that's not where it stops. Like, you need to, if you really want to go for it, let's say, you need to hustle. And you need to not only have one skill, you need more. I remember when I asked Joop van Bennekom, like, hey, why did you hire me? He's like, because I like your taste. People go to school and get a degree, but like, you need more, you know? And so that's also very important, to really perfect your taste and to be inspired by things other than like your interest, you know? Sometimes I'm inspired by things that don't have anything to do with football, but I turn it a bit and I reconceptualize it, and then I make it my own.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, that's very important. Sometimes I get inspired by fucking sitting in the public transport and just looking outside, and I see something. I'm like, oh yeah, that's interesting. You know, like, it sounds very poetic, but it is actually, there's a quote, right? Like, creators need to sit around and do nothing. Like, I feel that. Like, sometimes creating is not something that you can do 365 days a year. It's not like a practical thing to do. It's like, and you need a lot of ingredients, and you need to feel a certain type of way to create or to make your best creations.
Can you name something in the past week or weeks which inspired you or motivated you to fuel the engine again and pursue something?
Not really, no.
How different is lack of guidance? Because I see the logo on your arm.
Yeah.
How different is it from Stone Island for you? As in, I know the history of Stone Island.
Yeah, I don't think they're relatives.
Would you ever like to be in such a way as Stone Island is?
I mean, I love the brand, so I wouldn't say no, but it's just a different path, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is a quality brand. Their focus is quality, and they got adopted by football and by football fans and hooligans, let's say. And we like, our whole theme is football, so it's a different approach. And quality is obviously very important, but it's not the main thing, mm-hmm. you know? We're about football and about telling stories within the football realm and using references, but also finding a balance between reference that everyone knows and references that only a few know.
Do you know a little bit who your customers are and what their backgrounds are? Because it's related on football and on fashion.
Yeah.
Are there special types, or is it very wide? And
it is very wide. And also, I have to say, like, our customer is quite old. If you compare it to other, let's say, brands in Amsterdam, like, I see that.
What is old? What?
How old are you?
37.
I have to, like, be careful of what I call old, but it's...
No, I already heard it yesterday.
Yay. It's just like, when I came up with a name, let's say, Lack of Guidance, I knew that it's a difficult name. It's not like an easy name. It's like a name where that there's some depth in it. And I knew that 16-year-olds are not going to appreciate it or understand it like 30-year-olds are going to do. I think that's inevitable. Like, Lack of Guidance is a very poetic name. Like, when we do an event, for example, the people that are joining, they're not making me uncomfortable. But if I would do an event and there's only 16-year-olds, like, I wouldn't even invite my friends, you know? That's just something that was very, the thing that I wanted, to have a very mature brand. And that's what I'm still trying to do.
When I was told that the name Don't Waste Eye has a negative connotation, have you ever experienced in those years since founding that someone had comments on
our name?
Yeah.
Actually, I do. Yeah. It was like one guy that... like, the thing is, when we design a product, we work with a lot of references. So either the garment or the graphic is inspired by something in the football world. So I remember we designed a football kit, and it was inspired by an old Sheffield United jersey, like a very like specific one. So I was looking for, okay, the name. We always give the product a name, and so I googled Sheffield United, and I saw that it had like a Arabic owner, and the owner was called Abdullah or something. And I was like, I'm gonna call it the Abdullah jersey. And all of a sudden, this like online imam sent us an email, and he's like, "Hey, why are you calling it Abdullah? It means this and that, and la la la. And I don't agree. And you're also called lack of guidance, but like in Islam, we're actually guiding." And he wasn't really pleased by it. And I sent him an email back that I knew who he was, first of all, because I don't know if you know Salah Eddin from Rotterdam. He's like a very, like, I'm a big fan of his. And it's someone that he had some conversations with. So I knew that it's like a Dutch guy who became a Muslim. And we had a conversation about it. And I told him, like, "Hey, like, I give the product a name. And I think Abdullah is a really nice name. So why would I not call it Abdullah? It would be weird to not call it Abdullah for me, you know?" And then we had a conversation about it. And because I knew, I mean, what he was saying made sense. But it only, like, I think that he thought that it was run by white people and thought it was like, "Hey, it's funny to call it Abdullah," you know, but that's not how I roll. So I took the time to actually, there was a back and forth in emails, and that was the only negative comment actually about the brand name.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked it out.
Were there ever projects or moments that you were laying awake at night that you thought like, "Oof, what did I do right now?"
Not really.
Lucky man.
Yeah. I don't lay awake at night. Like, I mean, we had a little, like when we were doing the Raheem Sterling project, we came up with the project before the whole George Floyd murder. Mm-hmm. And after that, like, racism was a hot topic, you know, and we were already working on this project for a year almost, because it was such a big project. And then we were working with a charity from the UK. And they told us, like, "Hey, we already did the photo shoot and everything." And they were like, "Hey, we can not show the faces of the kids." So I was like, "Okay." Like, we were about to release this whole project and now we can't use the photo shoot anymore. I was just thinking, like, how am I gonna solve this problem? Because we were working with kids, so we, like, came up with this idea to put stickers over their heads, and we had all these different ideas. And then at some point, I just came up with the idea to just Photoshop their whole face away. Boom. It was like, okay, then if we can't show their face, we would just show the blue sky but not their face. And I remember that the photo shoot got even better. So I think that's something that I always think of when I have setbacks, is like, but maybe the setback is going to make it even better. That's to just keep myself motivated. And because having a business, especially in clothing, expect setbacks. That's just something that's inevitable. And there's going to be a lot of things that are going to make your life harder.
Okay, yeah. Name a couple.
I mean, just things are not going to go as you expected. Like, I think people that start a clothing brand, which are a lot, they think, okay, I'm going to produce clothing and it's going to be good quality. I'm going to make 150 hoodies because, yeah, I've, let's say, 3,000 followers, and maybe let's say 10% is going to buy it, and I have a lot of friends and la la la, and they think it's going to work out. But they spend a lot of money on the clothing production. They're going to spend a lot of money on the photo shoot. They're going to spend money on this, spend money on that, and then, like, only a handful of people are going to buy it. This is like a very dramatic scenario, but like, this is actually what happens a lot of time. And you need a lot of motivation then to keep on going.
So how do you motivate yourself?
The thing is, when I started a brand, I knew that I needed patience. That's where I started. That's like, if my mother taught me one thing, it's you have to have patience. That's just, that's the word that just kept on. She kept on repeating, like, patience, patience, patience. And that's something that I just knew when I started the brand. Like, hey, I'm not going to be rich in a week. It's not going to be the biggest brand in a year. So just keep on going and follow your vision. And even though, like, I rarely take the easy route. And that's just something that I'm a stubborn guy. So I'm just going to follow my gut and go for it. And even though it's not the biggest brand yet, I know that it has a lot of potential still. So I'm just going to follow.
This is what I can imagine.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's just very, very important to know that things take patience, especially nice things.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to build something beautiful, you have to have patience. Like the first 5-6 years of the brand, I didn't pay myself €0. Like I did nothing, you know, every penny stayed in the company. And we were just hustling on the side. And when I started Fantastic Man, I was still not paying myself. But I knew, like, if it's all going to work out one day, I can live from it, you know? So
how do you pay the rent and such?
Back then?
Yeah, because it's for someone listening.
Yeah, it's don't quit your day job. That's step one. And then step two is, like, keep grinding, let's say. And hopefully at some point I went from doing shitty jobs and lack of guidance, I went to doing nice jobs and shit and lack of guidance.
You also worked aside from lack of guidance.
Yeah, definitely. Like it has only become a full-time thing now. I stopped with Fantastic Man a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on, it was like...
Okay, yeah. It's a whole different ballgame for me.
What do you mean?
Well, I always thought that your income was 100% from lack of guidance.
No.
For me, this also...
Still not.
It gives way more value to the whole conversation.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think he started, made money, now he's not here. And
no.
This is a valuable lesson.
Yeah, it is. I mean...
Keep your day job.
And only... Like, I like growing out of things. Like, I only went away from Fantastic Man... because I just really couldn't combine the two anymore.
Hmm.
When I started my first Fantastic Man issue, it was quite okay and easy to combine the two. But when I did the last issue, I just really felt like, hey, this is getting out of hand. You know, like I can't be away from my company for a month.
Hmm.
That's just crazy. So that's when I told Joop, like, hey, I really want to stay, but I can't.
What was his response?
He respected it. And he, like, also how he dealt with me leaving was just... very special. I don't want to say how he dealt with it, but it was like it was also like very eye opening to me. Like, oh, this is how you can deal with someone leaving.
Probably positive, more positive,
very positive, and that's why I will represent Fantastic Man till the end of eternity. Because
next to your brother and Eva,
Joop from Lennekom, definitely. How he
on the record?
Yeah, it's like just spending time in the same room as him is insanely helpful.
Mm, in which way?
Because just how he looks at things, and he always knows if he doesn't like something, why he doesn't like it. And if he likes something, why he likes it. It's like, it's very precise with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also taste-wise, and also the longevity of Fantastic Man. I mean, try having a magazine for almost 25 years.
Crazy.
From
I don't have the experience, but I know.
Yeah, I mean, this
quite some.
He's a machine.
Yeah,
and also Gert Jonkers. I mean, but I always was in the same room as Joop van Bennekom. So that's, I mean, I learned the most from him, but also Gert Jonkers. Like, hats off to him as well.
Fast forward, lack of guidance, 5 to 10 years, it has grown. You have maybe a team. Hypothetically, what are the lessons that Joop has learned you, which you are passing on to others?
The thing is, like, I'm a 100% creative, let's say, but I'm not the best management type. And if when I see Joop managing, that's where I need help with, you know.
Well, that's a lesson.
That's
a very valuable one.
A very valuable lesson is like the creative part is just a very small part of running a business. And I remember when Joop used to ask me, like, hey, can you design this? And I would design it, and I would kind of hurry also. He would, like, as soon as I was done with it, he would ask me, hey, can you show me in a second? And I would be like, well, this timing, like, how do you do it? Because if he would ask me 5 minutes before, I would be annoyed because I was like, hey, I'm already hurrying. And 5 minutes too late would be too late. But, like, he knows exactly how long stuff takes. So that's, maybe it's a very specific thing, but that's something that I was like, how do you do that? You know?
And now, do you have an ask? Do you ever ask him?
Ask him what?
How does he do it?
Not this specifically, but we have conversations about, like, more on an entrepreneur level of, like, when I'm dealing with stuff, I tell him, he's like, giving his advice or vice versa. And also, like, I broke up with my business partner, you know, this year, and he has been in business with Gert Jonkers for almost 25 years. So that was also like a lot of questions, like, how do you do this? How do you do that? Like, they have their own studio, you know? I think that's a big thing of why they're still working together.
He feels like a mentor.
Yeah, he is in some ways a mentor to me. Yeah. I mean, I don't have like a like, I have a more serious or tight relationship with my brother, let's say, but like he is definitely someone that I look up to. I think he's more someone that I look up to because also sometimes you have to make drastic decisions in your company. And I remember when he told me that he started Fantastic Man with Gert Jonkers in Amsterdam, and they saw that they didn't get the budgets that they wanted to, because every brand, every big brand liked Fantastic Man, but they're like, yeah, we don't have money for a Dutch magazine. So they were like, okay, then let's become another, like, let's not become a Dutch magazine. So they went to London with the whole team.
That worked quite well.
That worked really well. Yeah. And even though they're back in Holland, they're still perceived as a UK magazine, because they also have Gentlewoman based in the UK, which is also their magazine. So I think making drastic decisions like that, this is something that I discuss with my brother a lot. It's like, the people that are very successful or that have a lot of money or a lot of assets, those are the people that took big risks. I think that's very important if you want to be successful, or you want to make a lot of money, or you want to have a big company, is that you have to take big risks.
Fully agree.
Yeah, so that's just something that I think of, even though it's like Lack of Guidance is independent, and like, it's, you have to not do crazy things, otherwise it can be over. But still, like, taking risks, even if it's creative. You know, like, sometimes you have to do something that is not cool yet, to be the first one that is doing it, you know?
Are there people on the globe that you don't personally know that inspire you because of their roadmap or the choices or the work they did?
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be, I can be inspired by someone that is not even doing something that I like. Strangely enough, you know, it's like
just a super general
idea. Yeah. Like, just at the top of my head, there's, for example, this guy in London called Cortese. Just the first name I could think of. Like, it's not that I'm crazy inspired by this guy. I don't even like follow him on Instagram, for example. But to see how he really believes in his brand and his own vision, that's very inspiring to me. But at the same time, I don't have any of his clothing. But just the vision, you know, it's like, that's very inspiring to me.
Do you have this feeling in Amsterdam, for instance? Are there people around you that you think are a big city, but not that big? Maybe I should call her or him once just to hear the story. Do you have this feeling? Because you strike me as a very intellectual person who wants to constantly grow, learn. And this is what Life Guide also brings together.
Good question. I don't know. Of course, there's people that I admire and I respect their whole journey, and I talk with them, but it's not like I'm not as like a sponge that is looking for insights, and like, I just want to have a conversation, and I like it to not feel forced. You know, it's like,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. It's like, if we just end up having a conversation that ended up being really helpful to me, that I like it, but I'm not going to like go out of my way to talk to this person and be inspired. I think that's how I look at it.
From A or B, do or die questions.
Let's do it.
Graphic design or fashion design?
Graphic design.
Are you more rational or emotional?
Rational.
Why the hesitation?
Because I'm also emotional. But I think, like, I don't follow astrology or anything, but I'm a Gemini, and I think that's the one thing that is very true. Like, the multiple personalities part is like something that I can really relate to.
Is it a fight or a pleasure having multiple personalities?
I mean, maybe you should ask my girlfriend, but to me it's...
I didn't dare to.
Yeah.
Strategy or intuition driven?
Intuition.
Focus on football culture exclusively or branch out into other sports or subcultures?
No, football exclusively.
That was a quick one.
Yeah.
Design a football-inspired collection that becomes a global sensation or maintain your brand's culture status as it is?
I want to go global.
Collaborate with an iconic footballer by your choice or a world-renowned designer by your choice?
I think designer. Yeah.
Do you have one particular in mind?
I can name a few.
Do you want to?
No. Actually, yes. Dick Bickenbergs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's basically the dream. Dick Bickenbergs is a designer from Belgium that's actually the first designer that presented football in a way that I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Was he from the Antwerp Six?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, even though there's not much left now of the brand.
Yeah, what a waste.
What a waste. But it's like, because I buy a lot of vintage Bickenbergs and I'm like, wow, it's still pretty affordable because it's not really a thing in every country.
Mm.
Like, for example, a friend of mine that has a vintage store called Duke's Cupboard, they have a store in London and in Amsterdam. I was talking about Dick Bickenbergs and he was like, who? And I was like, ah, okay. So it's not really a thing in every country.
Ching, ching.
Yeah. I told him, like, yeah, get that quick. But yeah, Dick Bickenbergs, definitely.
Become brand director for Ajax Amsterdam. Or build lack of guidance?
Build lack of guidance, definitely.
Focus on sustainability and slow fashion or prioritize rapid growth and expansion?
Prioritize rapid growth and expansion, yeah.
Be known for the quality of your designs or the cultural impact?
Quality of design, I have to say. Because, yeah, I feel that like we get a lot of support from the graphic design. It's not really a community, but like a lot of graphic designers are loving what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very special to me. It's like a very big, big compliment.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And how can you tell?
Sometimes when we have an order, I'm very curious. So I just look up their name and be like, hey, it was this person. Or when someone shares a picture of them wearing it or whatever, like I still see everything.
Yes, that I noticed. Yeah. Which is very good.
Yeah, definitely.
As in you're approachable.
Mm.
And how do you see yourself as a personal brand?
Well, I wouldn't see myself as a personal, as in you mean the person myself?
Oh, a personal brand.
Oh, very much, yeah. Very much, yeah. It's like everything that the brand is saying, I'm saying, basically. Like if I'm making a statement, it's a statement I want to make. Because the thing is, like, I'm not the guy that is going to be an activist on Instagram, but I want to share my point of view, but I'm going to do it through my brand. The road to the World Cup in Qatar, for example, I just noticed that I was like, okay, why are all these countries saying, like talking shit about Qatar while they have done many worse things than Qatar has done? And that's just like a thought in my mind, and I'm like, okay, I'm looking, and then I do a project about it, but like it's a very stubborn thing to have a totally different statement than anyone else is doing. But I was like, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon and say fuck Qatar. But because even though I kind of think it, but I'm also like, why is America talking? You know, that's what I'm thinking. Like they're the biggest war criminals on the planet and they're talking shit about Qatar. Like that doesn't make sense to me. So that's when we did the project Nation of Violation with Moneyfold. They reached out to me actually, and they had this idea, but they only had like let's say the visual aspect of it. It wasn't a concept yet. And then we really really like shaped it up really nice. And the concept was basically that they designed a football that consists of 30 parts, and every part stands for a human right. And we would make a unique ball for every participating country in the World Cup. And for example, if they did a good job in this specific human right, it would be white.
Mm-hmm.
And when they didn't do a good job, it would be black. And that's the first thing that I intervened with, is like, why is white positive and why is black negative? And then They were like, okay, yeah, good question. So that's when we changed that up. So if a ball is really black, it's a good thing. And if it's really white, it's a bad thing. So just little things where we really added like a very conceptual approach to it. Because the thing is, it's a very, let's say, white way of thinking.
Mm. Yeah.
A lot of things in the creative industry are very white, have a very, very white approach. And same goes for the Qatar thing. It's a very white thing, but like me, because I'm not white, I can have a different approach. So I'm going to add it to the table. And that's when we did it. And I really like that project. Like every time, that's what I always meant with the whole mature thing. It's like, it's a very mature project. It's not like talking about silly stuff. It's actual, like, really meaningful topics that we're talking about. We're talking about life and death, you know. It's like, you can't make if you're doing a project about life and death, you have to be really serious and really approach it also in a very serious way.
And where do you want to take Lack of Guidance?
I think the name is very ironic because I don't even know where I want to take it. I just want to raise it as a child. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, it's like if you're raising a baby or raising a child, you don't know if it's going to love football or basketball, but you just want to make sure that it falls into place. And I think that's what I want to do with Lack of Guidance. It's like, I have the patience, I know that. And there's going to be a lot of opportunities. And I just want to make sure every opportunity we get is well executed. And that's what I'm focusing on right now. But I'm not, like, I never made a business plan, for example. I just know where I want to take it step by step. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to set expectations for myself, and that's just not how I do. Like, sometimes when I'm laying in bed and I can't sleep, I think of where it could go. Where it could go, but it's more fantasizing.
Mm.
But it's not like, hey, I want to take it there and I want to take it there. Like, I can dream, like, for example, doing something with Big and Bears, for example. It's like that would be my dream come true.
Mm.
But it's not like if that doesn't happen that I feel like I failed. So it's not, I wouldn't want to take it there, but I just want to, if that would happen, that would mean the world to me.
Yes, mine will as well.
Yeah.
I'll remind you in half a year.
Yeah, I hope it happens.
Yeah. What do you prefer more? Design a single iconic piece or create a collection that tells a story?
I'm noticing, like, the more I'm becoming a designer, the more I'm enjoying the part of actually building a collection. I think that's where your real development takes place.
Yeah.
I know that I can make a really cool one piece thing, but building a collection is that's where it gets really hard, because it's like one big soup and all the ingredients have to work together, and like it's a different craft. I remember, like, the second year that we did the Deck Monto collab,
a nice one,
I liked it very much, and I liked all the individual products, but if you see them next to each other, it doesn't feel like a collection. And this year when we did it, maybe there's pieces from the second year that I like more than the individual pieces of this year. But as a collection, it just was way more aligned and it made way more sense. And I think that's a bigger challenge, I think, for a designer to make a real collection. So I think I would say collection.
Collaborate with a major football club on a special collection or create a standalone line for a major fashion brand?
Standalone line for fashion brand.
Yeah. Why?
Because I think it's when you're working with a big club, I don't know, I think there's too much concessions you have to make. Because now we've done a few collaborations that are not out yet, so we're going to see them next year. But when you're working with really big corporations, there's just too much concessions. Hey, we cannot do this, we cannot do this. Oh, we already did this and all that. So I think if I would work together with a big fashion house, obviously, they are more willing to push the boundaries, I think.
So what kind of a fashion house? If I say Dior and H&M, Is it in between or is it more
inclusive? I think I would want to work with like a big sportswear brand. Like, for example, there's Nike has like an ongoing football collection every year that's called Real Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to do that, and it's from a, I think from a Japanese brand that's like a collaboration with Nike, Sofnet. Do you know Sofnet?
No.
It's like a, I think it's Japanese, but it could be from another country. And they have a like a fixed collaboration with Nike, and it's called FC Real Bristol. Mm-hmm. And for example, Adidas is doing it with Yohji Yamamoto, and it's called Y3. I think this type of collaboration, I would love to do that.
Let's call Akar when you listen to this.
Yeah. Because I can really, like, I could really build something crazy.
Oh, that I fully believe.
Yeah.
Ever been in Japan?
I'm going to go in May.
Oh,
yeah.
Lucky man.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Where are you going?
I'm going to visit Japan, and I'm also going to visit South Korea. Yeah, so it's going to be one big ass trip.
How long and with what are you going to see in Japan?
Well, I don't know. Who knows? But
this I couldn't do.
No? No, I mean,
I would plan everything.
I ask around, but I'm not going to be like, hey, on Monday we're going to do this, and on Tuesday, that's not my style.
No.
I just also want to be, just be amazed by things that I see that are just accidents, you know, like, and like me and Eva, we're really good travel partners because we just, the thing is like we work really hard. So when we're there, like we have this thing where we talk about fantasizing about doing naps because we never do naps. So on our holiday, we're all like, oh, where are we going? When we're going to be home, we're going to do one big ass nap, and we never do it. That's the funny thing. We actually never take a nap. But yeah, I just want to really go there and be amazed.
Oh, that's
going to happen.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah. I listened to this podcast where Mick Johan, I don't know if you know Mick Johan, he lived in, I don't even know the guy really, like personally, but I heard him say that he lived in Japan for a long time, and he had this thing where he would just take a subway somewhere unknown and just walk out, and you're like in a totally different world. And I was like, oh, that I really like that.
If I would have the time,
yeah,
more than exactly. 2 weeks, then I'd do it.
But for sure, that's something that that's more my style, to be do like, it. Okay, just take the subway and you just go out, and you're in a world and you have never heard of this place, and it's thousands of people.
Yeah.
So that's...
And if you like graphic design, then
exactly.
you'll be sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Last question for the AOB. Sell your brand to a major sportswear company or keep it independent forever?
Well, I would now say keep it independent because it wasn't easy to make it one. And to also like be in charge, let's say. So I kind of had, like I said in the beginning, I had to kind of fight for this year. So I'm now like enjoying the fact that it's mine. But I would sell a stake maybe. Like if a big sportswear brand is like, hey, we really like what you're doing and let's work together. And I mean, sure. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't sell everything. No.
Do you feel responsible for this generation and the next?
No. But I want to use my voice where I think it's going to have an effect, but I don't feel responsible now. And I don't think everyone should feel, it's maybe a weird thing to say, but not everyone should feel responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think a lot of people feel responsible while they're not even making a positive impact, you know? So like if you dedicate your whole life to have a positive impact, then I salute you and I appreciate the responsibility. But if you only want to make it look like you have or making a positive impact, I wouldn't say that the feeling of responsibility is just.
Do you know what impact lack of guidance has? And is it even measurable?
No, I wouldn't say it's measurable, but it's really branching out. And that's also what I love. Like, for example, I mentioned South Korea, and there's a store owner there. Like, he has a really cool store called Opener. He reached out to us because he loved the brand, and we're working together with him now for a few years already. And he works with a lot of, like, good stylists, and those stylists work together with these big K-pop celebrities. Mm. I'm going to show you after the interview, but there's, like, 50 pictures of the biggest K-pop celebrities wearing lack of guidance while on stage and dancing and like whatever. And that's what amazes me.
Mm.
Like you come up with this idea, you make a sample, you sell it, and it ends up on a body in South Korea of a K-pop celebrity.
What was the first thought or feeling that you got when you sold those photos?
Just the randomness of it, I love. You know, it's like it doesn't have anything to do with football. It's like it's so far away from what we represent, but still, just the randomness of it, I love. You know, it's just it's like the comical aspect of it, like that I love.
Do you also have certain thoughts about when those photos are being published, or do you notice revenue growth or nothing? Or
sometimes you do.
But for instance, with this K-pop, it's such a...
Yeah, exactly. And that it's very specific. So it's like there was this very big artist, and she was wearing like a full lack of guidance suit on the airport, and there was like hundreds of cameras following her.
Lucky you.
Lucky me, yeah. And then we noticed... It actually starts like that. Like I always have the pop-ups... Like every time someone makes an order, I get an email, and I want to keep it like that because it's like to motivate myself. And so when you notice that a lot of people are buying the same product at the same time, you're like, hey, what's happening?
Mm.
You know? And then you go to like tag posts, and there's all these accounts that are following what these people are wearing. And then you go there and you see like all these posts, and you're like, ah, okay, now I get it. You know? So, and that's very funny. It's like they when they go to your website, they don't want to buy other stuff. They only want to buy the product that she or he's wearing.
Does it also make you a little bit emotional looking back at always following your intuition and exploring?
That's when I get really emotional and also very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Is when the thing is like when I watched this documentary on Amazon about the founders of Daily Paper. I mean, they're not my biggest friends, but I really respect them, you know, and I know them. And there's this one part where someone says to Hussein, one of the founders, and it's like, hey, why are you doing that? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, why are you making it look like it's so easy? And I'm like, well, fuck yeah, he's right. It's like, it's not easy, this. You know, it's no rocket science, but it's not easy to run a clothing brand. I mean, people listening are probably going to say, like, this guy's talking shit, but it's like,
why would you think that?
I mean, just to come up with ideas to, I mean, maybe not, like, to be a relevant clothing brand, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part. Because you have to come up with ideas to know what is going to be cool in 1 year. That's already very hard. And also, not only that, people expect you to grow as a business.
Mm-hmm.
To expand,
mm-hmm.
to keep evolving. Like if you're going to make a collection with like similar products, similar designs, people are already going to be like, yeah, but we know this. You know, it's like, it's not easy. So, yeah.
Do you deal a lot with expectations from the world or certain people around you? Or
really? I guess. It's because people have things to say like, hey, why are you doing this? Or... Because I think it's a very natural thing of people to think that they can do it better. I think a lot of people think that if they would try, they would do a better job. But that's the whole thing. to collect the balls to try, that's the biggest part, I think.
Yes.
You know,
do you ever feel you want to teach?
No, I enjoy like talking to people. But it could also, like, when I was working in the store, when people walked in and like I could see in their face that they're kind of like looking for purpose, I would just start a conversation with them. And sometimes we end up having a conversation for an hour.
Mm.
I think that's also teaching. You know, it's like if someone's 17, 18 years old, and I ask them, like, hey, what are you doing? I'm doing this. Okay, like, why are you doing it? And yeah, because I want to blah, blah, blah. And then just having that conversation, I think, is really helpful for other people. And I don't want to be like a traditional teacher, but I want to like teach and guide people around me. I definitely do that. Like, people are asking me for advice, strangely enough. And yeah, that's just something that I enjoy doing. I have a design intern now from Denmark, and I reached out to him. He didn't reach out to me. I just saw him on Instagram. He was very young, and he was kind of starting a similar brand to what I'm doing. And I just reached out. I'm like, hey, are you looking for an internship? He's like, yeah, next year. I'm like, reach out to me. You can do an internship with me. He's like, okay, cool. And now I'm really showing him a lot, you know, like not only of how it is to create, but also what it looks like to have a business.
Like you've been shown.
Yeah. And to show how you need to present yourself, and also that the work never stops. He lives like above our office because I arranged like a, but he sees me working 7 days a week. So he knows, like, if I want to do this, this is kind of going to be normal in the first few years.
Could it be in less hours than this?
It could. Yeah. But I'm not the most efficient guy.
Mm.
Like, sometimes I go to work a bit later and then I leave a bit later. And then, you know, it's like, so I notice that in the evenings I'm a bit more productive. So
how does he see it? Because you hire him.
Yeah.
He has a job from 9 to 5.
Yeah.
But you work in the evenings, where you should tell him, please don't look, because how do you make sure that he gets the most benefit from the internship when you're peaking in the evenings?
I think Lack of Guidance is not a traditional company, let's say, where it has like a 9-to-5 structure and there's 10 positions and everyone knows what he or she has to do. It's still very small. Mm. And we work with external freelancers. We work with a company called Tree Filling Window, for example, that is in charge of our strategy. And I work with Sophie. She's basically my right hand at the moment. And she's the product manager, and she makes sure
everyone stays healthy.
Exactly. And she just makes sure the ball keeps rolling. And we also have Amira. She's in charge of like the actual making of the product. That's how the company looks as of now. We just hired a new guy from Rotterdam. Max Bicebles, and he's going to be in charge of marketing. So we're kind of branching out now, because the collaborations that are on its way give us the possibility to hire people, let's say, and we're going to do that also organically. Like when we think that we need help, that's when we're going to look for someone.
Keep on going.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Akar shared how his love for football culture fuels his designs, and why embracing the physicality of his work through magazines, books and clothing makes it more meaningful. One key takeaway? Authenticity matters. Whether navigating setbacks or celebrating successes, Akar's story is a reminder to trust your passion and build something that truly resonates. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.